Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 180!
180! That's a darts thing, isn't it?
It's a darts thing.
Yes, I thought, oh, that sounds like a darts thing.
Well done.
It no is, idea if it's a good darts thing or not.
It is a good thing.
Oh, okay, right.
They do yell it.
They do yell it a lot. I'm not sure for good or bad.
I think it's maybe the top school or something.
Okay.
No, it can't be. Well, unless you had three bullseyes. I don't know. Darts. You often work your way down. No, not from 180.
I don't
200.
Care.
No,
I don't care.
Well, you started something there.
Why? Why did I start that?
You know what it
that?
Is? When you say something, I go, oh, here are all the things I know about it. Nobody asked.
And it wasn't a lot.
And it was short. Isn't that nice? Yes.
And a lot of it was made up.
Exactly. It's a fairy tale. How are you, Nick?
I'm fine.
You're good.
Yeah?
Are we mentioning it?
No.
Shall we talk of the celebration of today?
The celebration of the day. Well, when this comes out, I should have some new keys.
To your little flat.
To my own little flat.
To your kingdom.
Yes. My God, that's been a mission and a half.
It's happened, people. The purchase has gone through. You are a homeowner.
Yes.
So exciting.
Yes, well, I'm still in it. Until I've got those keys in my hand, I'm still...
I know. No, Nick, you have exchanged contracts.
Yeah. I know it's all now legally binding.
But then you think people can still be...
Until I've got those keys in my hand, I'm not convinced.
By the time this episode comes out...
Then I should have the keys in my
hand. You will have the keys in your hand. You get the keys on a Friday.
On Friday.
And yes, and then we shall be doing much paint samples and
carpeting. Oh, yeah, and then the craziness begins, absolutely.
Yes. Now, when you were initially going to redecorate your old place, people were very invested in your design choices, and I think we should reignite this, particularly on Patreon. People were very, very invested.
The design choices are going to be quite similar, I feel.
They want to see how it works out.
Okay.
We teased it to them, so big, big congratulations. I'm so pleased for you. This is so exciting. And was a journey.
It was a journey. Five bloody months. But we've got there.
You've got that. Well, got there. Any poisonings this week?
No, I'm in too good of a mood.
Since the exchange has happened, every 2 minutes there has been a discussion about what he can buy and all the combinations
Absolutely.
Of things.
I've already spent in the last 2 days several £1,000.
It's been quite a journey, actually.
Just because, like, I want one of them, and I want one of them.
Today you showed me a wall wine rack.
Yes.
That I didn't love, to be honest, but I think it's practical. But I didn't want to say no because you were on some sort of roll.
I think it's going to look very smart. I need to measure. I think it'll be fine.
Well, guys, please weigh in with interesting objets d'art or furniture choices that Nick can make. Don't just send the old teacups with, oh, you've been poisoned on them. We love those. But is there anything else more to Nick's style that you think he should have in his house? Suggestions on a postcard or, you know, on social media. Well, speaking of buying houses and then making weird design choices with them, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Yes, I mean, by that, are you judging their house choices? I don't know.
Oh, I would never judge them. I think weird is good.
Right, okay. Well, who knows? So thank you very much this week to Sherry Dominic, who knows how weird her house is.
Oh, Sherry, she knows.
It's desperately weird. Multicoloured and striped and polka dots in other rooms and...
Multicoloured.
Oh,
thank you for joining us, Sherry. We are... Sherry, my darling, Sherry. My darling, Sherry. You might pronounce it differently. We're pronouncing it that way because we think you're very, very sexy, as all our Patreon subscribers are. We had fun on Patreon this week. We told quite a tale that one Patreon... subscriber described as perfectly, like an episode of Dallas.
Yes.
Absolutely spot on. It was there were horses involved. There was an extravagant music room.
Were there a lot of horses in Dallas?
Yeah.
I know, I've never watched Dallas.
Why have you never watched Dallas?
Because I'm not a 70-year-old woman.
I don't know what you're trying to say, even though that's exactly what I aspire to. I want to be a 70-year-old woman wearing very strange clothing, watching my soaps and drinking heavily.
That was Joan Collins, wasn't it? Dallas.
Oh, no, Joan Collins with Dynasty.
Oh, Dynasty.
The other D one. My mum and my grandmother. So Dallas was... Oh God, well, the thing is, I only watched it as a child because my mother and my grandmother were obsessed
with it. You know what I've realised? I'm really good at asking questions that I really don't care about.
And I am very, very good at responding.
I'm sitting there going... Why did I do that? Why did I ask?
Yeah, because you asked me about darts to start off with. And then you just go, oh, yeah, I don't care.
I should be less interested in other people.
You would love Dallas.
Would I? Okay.
The shoulder pads, the blusher.
I do love blusher and shoulder pads.
The shooting of people. Who shot JR?
Oh, was that Dallas? Yeah. I've heard of that.
Yes, who shot JR? Yeah. I remember that vaguely. Okay. Big thing.
And what, didn't one of them wake up and it was a dream?
Yeah, that's when it jumped the shark, as it were. Bobby had been killed.
You know
and then
a
woke
lot
up.
About this.
Well, because it's a cultural, it's like the zeitgeist. It's sort of, you know, it's a very, very important thing.
If I look at your DVD
TV.
Collection, so I'm going to find a box set.
No, I've not watched Dallas since I was about 10.
Is it in the DVD player now? You've been binging at least.
No, there's not a DVD player. There's just a room in my house dedicated to it with pictures on the walls and like plot lines everywhere.
Right. Moving on.
We're going to watch Dallas in a bit. That's what I'm buying you for your new house. Well, Nick, are you ready?
Yes.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Yes.
Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
No. I've got a house to decorate. Got stuff to do. Can't be doing with poisonings.
Well, let's go with the first one, because all good house decor decisions are made drunk.
Absolutely.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, but we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. And this week's secret ingredient is
the Duchess.
The Duchess.
The Duchess.
The Duchess.
The Duchess. A very specific Duchess.
Yes. Now, I did not Google the picture that you sent me, but you said it must be her. It must be she.
Is this picture?
I love a Duchess.
The picture that I sent you is the Duchess of Devonshire.
Of Devonshire?
Yes.
Oh, fancy. She had a fabulous hat.
A fabulous hat. Was apparently a complete debauched degenerate.
Brilliant.
Loved a drinking and a gambling and a shagging any of the stable boys she could find. Fantastic. Love her.
I'm not surprised.
She was having a grand old time.
Have you met the gentry? They do enjoy the things.
So she was up there with the things.
We have had a cocktail.
We've had the Duchess before. The Duchess.
Way. She loved that.
She did.
In the hayloft. What? It seems apparently where she likes to go.
With the candlestick? I don't know.
You said like she likes stable boys. It's like, with the candlestick? What the... Really?
I know there's a crossover between Cluedo there as well. I don't know.
And Beauty and the Beast. Be our guest. Lumiere, you saucy man. Well, that's an image. Yes. Right, well, it's not that.
It's not any of that.
It's not that. But with the Duchess as your inspiration, the Duchess of Devonshire.
That's the Duchess of Devonshire.
Devonshire. What have you come up with?
Well, I had noticed, well, actually you pointed out that we had done the Duchess before.
Mm-hmm.
There are, in fact, two cocktails. So the one we had before is just Duchess.
Duchess.
No the. Or anything.
Oh.
Today, we're having the Duchess.
Can we call it the Duchess 2?
Yes.
Yes.
We call it the Duchess of Devonshire.
Duchess of Devonshire.
Yeah.
The Duchess 2.
The Revenge.
In 4D.
This time it's Duchy.
Brilliant. brilliant. I'm obsessed already. I think it is high time for us to swan Duchess Like into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick, the Duchess of Devonshire.
Duchess of Devonshire.
The Duchess too. The Duchening.
The Duchening.
Love it. Okay, it's very clear.
It is.
Crisp looking.
Crisp and clear.
I will apologise that you did say that you were going to use some of the lovely dehydrated fruits.
I was. I thought a lovely slice of dehydrated orange would be a great and a treat.
Yeah.
But then it was
Yeah, it's
green.
Moldy. The container I put them in, because I didn't know how to store them, and clearly not well. I don't want to imply that my kitchen is full of mold or anything.
Everything in Shanae's kitchen is just coated in mold.
Looks crisp and clear and pretty.
Mm.
Well, I think we should dive in.
Yes.
Merry Christmas.
Dutchening.
Merry Duchy.
Merry Duchy. Ooh. Smells.
Sorry, I just took a gulp and then smelled it. I was like, oh, sorry, we're smelling. Ooh, okay. Huh.
Ooh, that's a...
Huh.
How curious.
Hmm.
Ooh, it's... the Duchess, she's an odd one.
She is an odd one. She's weird.
Special, this Duchess is.
Special, this Duchess. She's Yoda, apparently. Is Yoda just wearing a Duchess's outfit?
Yes. Yoda in tiara.
Yes. Oh, to the ball I must go. Right, so that is curious.
Curious is a good word for it.
Do I like it? Do you do? I'm not opposed to it, but I don't love it.
It's very, very, I would say flavourful, but not, I'm thinking smellable. Aromatic.
Aromatic.
Aromatic. That's aromatic. The word. That's
Sorry,
the
I was
word
just
I was
shocked into what the
that's
fuck is
very,
happening
very
here.
Very smellable.
Please now go and write copy for Givenchy. All of the perfumes.
Yes.
J'adore. Smellable.
Smellable.
Oh my God. Okay. Is it though, actually? Because I'm just, well, I mean, I can't smell anything best of the times.
No, there is a strong aroma going on there.
It's not that strong. I've smelled stronger cocktails, not just smells in general.
I smell stronger.
Okay. Good things, yes. So I'm now smelling it. Yes. I'm doing nothing but smelling
it.
Just
what's in it. Come on. Do you like it?
I don't mind it.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I think it's underwhelming, personally. However, there's an interesting complexity to it with every sip. It's got an acidity without it being overly citrus. Is there a citrus fruit in here?
No.
No citrus.
It's interesting. It could probably do with being colder.
Oh, do you think?
Yeah.
Did you not stir it
enough? I didn't stir it enough, I think. This is a stirred cocktail.
I heard you stirring. That's the only reason I know.
Yes, I don't think I gave it enough time to reduce in temperature.
You bastard.
I know.
Maybe if it was colder, it would be icy crisp. But so, there's no lemon or lime in this. Gin.
Yes.
Gin. Okay.
One down.
Vermouth? Some to go. Vermouth?
Yes.
There's a dry vermouth in there.
Two down.
Ah, I thought it had a winey, dry quality
winey,
to it.
Winey, dry quality.
Two down out of how many?
12.
Shit.
No. Four.
Four, right.
Halfway there. Two more things.
Oh, something floral but fruity? Fruity? Maraschino?
Nope.
I don't know.
A Cointreau?
Oh, bloody hell. Oh, I thought it was a Cointreau,
so
and I thought I'd be foolish.
An orange.
And that gives it the less clear thing. Fine.
And then one other thing.
One other thing. Oh, you're being so smug. Okay, one other thing. What might that be?
That might be a big old glug of wine.
Oh, God, right. Sorry. And Nick bought a bottle of wine to my house.
Yes. Did you not put the two together?
No, I just thought you wanted some wine.
Right, no. Well,
I
yes,
just,
but...
Well, I just thought you'd bought a bottle of white wine and you wanted to have a glass of wine later, so I just stuck it in the fridge.
I will have a glass of wine later.
Yeah, let's get shit-faced on wine. We celebrate your
but
house.
But there's also wine in the cocktail.
There's wine in that. That's why it tastes so winey.
That's why it also tastes winey.
Because I just thought that was the vermouth. I was sure there was vermouth
there
in
going,
it.
Oh, it's very winey, this cocktail.
It tastes
so there's a lot of wine going on there. Vermouth. Yes.
Yeah. Also, wine. There was bloody vermouth in it. Shut up. There was vermouth in it. How much wine? Like a glass?
There's equal quantities of everything. 3/4 of an ounce of all things.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes, I taste the wine.
You taste the wine now?
I really don't. I really don't taste the wine, apart from just
apart from
little...
when it tasted winey.
But it tastes of vermouth, so that whiny aftertaste.
It tastes whiny, but not of wine.
Yes, yes, exactly that. Exactly. Why that. Is that so hard to understand? Like, same way a martini, like a wet martini, has a wine taste, but doesn't taste of wine. Aha. Yeah, just blew your mind there. Yes.
Mm. Okay, Partridge.
Words, semantics, nitpicking. <Yeah. laughs> Well, after that. I don't know.
Do you like the Duchess?
I like the Duchess. Good. I don't mind her. I think it's weird, though. She's had a little bit too much wine.
Yes, probably.
But that's always a good thing in a Duchess. What do you think of that? Do you love that?
I don't love it. I think it's perfectly pleasant.
Would you order it or make it again?
Probably not, to be honest.
There you go.
Probably not. I will more than happily finish this, but no.
It's fine. It's not disappointing.
No, not at all.
But it's just fine.
But it's not going to enter my usual repertoire of Friday night cocktails.
The Duchess is not allowed in.
She's not allowed in.
She's not allowed in this riffraff. No. Well, with the Duchess of Devonshire.
Duchess of Devonshire.
Firmly in hand.
Yes.
Is it time for a story, Nick?
It is time for a story.
Hooray!
I'm excited about this story. I like this story. It's a good story.
I can tell.
Yeah, it's a good story. So this week, we have the tale of Adam Worth.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with Adam Worth?
No.
Good. This is a man who maintained such an air of mystery around him that very few ever knew the truth about the man who Scotland Yard called the Napoleon of Crime.
Oh, that expression I've heard.
You know, he is so cunning.
Right.
So bold and ambitious that he is widely believed to be the inspiration behind Conan Doyle's arch criminal, James Moriarty.
Oh, okay.
So, yes.
Love it. And he's referred to as the
and
Napoleon.
And Moriarty is referred to as the Napoleon,
Napoleon
of, crime.
Of crime.
It comes from Adam Worth.
Adam Worth.
Indeed.
Hey.
So, yeah, so very little is known about his childhood, as is the tradition.
Not much
He was born into a Jewish family in Germany or Austria.
Oh, okay.
1840s, 1845, something in that neck of the woods, people think. At the time, his name was either Worth with an E or Wurtz, potentially. But when, in 1849, the family moved to New York, it became anglicised by an immigration officer who... couldn't spell, so it Worth. Wasn't that bothered with the exact German spelling. So the family became the Worths.
It's a fascinating part of history in terms of the origin of people's names, but also that a lot of people's names got changed by someone who went, yeah, I'm not writing that down.
Yeah, I can't spell
that. Yeah, can't spell that. Imagine if I'd ever rocked up. Like, that is a headache. You're just called Jim now.
Yeah, Jim. Yeah. So... the family, eventually, they settle in Cambridge, which is just north of Boston. Today, Cambridge has been subsumed by Boston, but at the time, they were two very separate entities.
Places.
Entities. They were living, breathing things. With tentacles and eyes.
Fucking hell.
But Cambridge is not a very exciting place.
No.
Not a very exciting place. So, Adam... tempted by the big lights of Boston City, runs away. Boston wasn't that exciting.
Oh.
2 years later, at the age of 16, he makes his way to New York City. Now, at first, Adam is a law-abiding citizen. He gets a job at a department store, all very respectable. And in 1861, when the American Civil War begins, he decides to enlist. He's going to do his duty, I would say, for king and country. Not for king and country, for country.
Not so much in the 1800s.
Not so much for the king. But he's there to do his duty. I mean, the $1,000 sort of bonus fee is also... quite attractive.
quite appealing
as well. But no, he is going to enlist. He is off for adventure and excitement in the Union Army. Now, in the army, his superiors quickly discover that Adam is an ambitious and very intelligent young man.
Good for him.
Within a month, he's promoted to corporal. And in just over a year, he makes sergeant in the army. So he is advancing swiftly up the ranks.
Like it.
On the 30th of August... his regiment takes part in the Second Battle of Bull Run. Now, this battle is a significant defeat for the Union forces. And during the battle, Adam is hit by shrapnel.
Oh.
And has to be taken to hospital in Georgetown. And in hospital, on the 25th September, 1862, he dies from his injuries.
Okay.
It's the end of the story now. But he's not actually dead.
No, right. Okay.
Surprisingly, he's not actually dead. Okay. There's an error in the paperwork.
Not that I'm a liar.
There is an error in the hospital paperwork which lists Adam Worth as killed in action.
Oh dear.
He is, in fact, recovering quite nicely from his wounds. When he learns of this mistake, he is left with a choice, really. Either he can go to the hospital authorities and say, no, actually, I'm alive, hello. And go back to his regiment and continue fighting.
Uh-huh.
Or he can use being dead to the best of his advantage, really, and do whatever the fuck he likes. So he, unsurprisingly, he chooses the second option.
Right.
He chooses to go, yeah, I'm dead. Absolutely. Bye. According to everyone, Adam Worth is dead.
But this is where it confuses me how that can work. Obviously, it's not now where you have Facebook to tell everyone that
absolutely.
You're...
There are no electronic records or anything like that.
But then how can he live his life? Because he needs an identity, surely.
Well, he can be whoever he wants to be.
Oh, I guess. Yeah.
Now, absolutely. No one going, oh, Adam Worth, he owes me £100. Well, Adam Worth's dead. There's a certificate that says Adam Worth's dead.
He can turn up with a certificate going, actually, I think you'll find
actually,
I'm dead.
Fine, he's dead.
I shouldn't have brought this.
Yeah, indeed. At the time when he decides to start this new life, the morale in the Union Army is incredibly low. Men are deserting all over the place and legging it.
Yeah.
And Adam, he comes up with a cunning plan. Now, the army are still offering huge bonuses to those who will volunteer to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So he signs up again.
Okay.
Yeah, different regiment, different name.
Yeah.
He gets his money.
Money.
Waits just long enough to get his bonus, and then he fucks off.
Right.
Then he runs. He moves to the next town, lays low for a bit. Signs up again. Different name, different regiment. Ooh, I'll have my bonus. Thank you very much. He does this numerous times, pocketing the cash each time and then fucking off. Now, there are so many deserters in the army at this point that there are just not enough people to go and chase them all down.
Yeah.
And to go and collect back this money. So a lot of them are just like, oh, he's gone. Fine.
It does seem like a flaw in the system. They're going, yes, we're getting a lot of people deserting after we've paid them the money.
Yeah.
Let's keep doing this. And find some other way of tracking them down.
Well, they do cotton on that this is perhaps not the best way to go about getting people into the army.
Okay.
And in 1863, they pass new laws introducing a draft, conscription, basically. So now the incentives are gone. So you can't volunteer, you've just got to. However, there is another little workaround in the law that says if you are drafted, you can pay someone else to take your place.
Yes.
So he goes, I'll do.
I've got a lot of money.
He finds people who have been drafted and who are not too keen to fight.
Right.
So those people pay him a bunch of cash.
Yeah.
And he rocks up to the regiment. Yes, hello, I'm here instead of Bob over there. He's received a bunch of cash from Bob to take his place.
Right. Oh, okay.
He then reports in, hello, I'm here. 2 weeks later, bye.
Bob's in trouble for dodging the draft.
Yeah.
And he's off scot-free. And he's just running around going, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a good...
And of course, he's given a completely bogus name, so no one knows who the hell he is.
Ah, reprehensible.
Reprehensible,
The draft is not great. Not great, let's be honest. But also, oh, what a good scheme.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone's an idiot apart from him.
And he does this numerous times.
I'm sure he does.
And he's not the only man who's doing this. Many others have cottoned on to this way of doing things. And they become known as bounty jumpers.
Bounty jumpers.
Yeah.
Oh, love it.
Who jump from one bounty to the next, which is fantastic.
Please let there be one bounty hunter who thought he was going to get a special jumper for his job. They were like, oh, it's guys? Oh, man.
The problem does become so severe that the army, they actually employ the Pinkerton Agency
to
track down bounty jumpers and put a stop to these activities. And they are quite successful because they're relatively brutal and sort of ambitious chaps themselves. So they pull no punches.
They rout them out in their cachet of big false moustaches.
So he has a couple of close brushes with the agency, uh-huh. and he decides, okay, bounty jumping. It's becoming too risky.
No.
It's becoming too risky now. He decides to return to New York, get into the less risky, but still entirely illegal business of pickpocketing. This is the way forward.
Hands on, though.
Wow, indeed. But once again, his intelligence and his quick thinking, and what's known about him is his severe dislike of the drink. He has absolutely abhorred alcohol.
Really?
So he was a sober, clear-thinking chap.
Straight edge.
Absolutely. And this pushes him to the top of the pack, really.
Well, yeah, he's got his wits about
him. He's got his wits about him, absolutely. So he's not making silly mistakes.
And this is what time period now? What years are we at now?
So now we're in sort of 1860s. Yeah, late 1860s.
Ooh, nice, nice. The gangs are emerging.
Absolutely. So, and yet he starts running his own gang of pickpockets. Because, yeah, he's got his wits about him. He's not spending all his money down the pub. He's there organising stuff. One thing sets this gang apart, though, is that there is to be no violence. His time in the army, and especially during the battle, where he was so badly wounded, he absolutely detests violence. And he will not allow his men, the people under him, to resort to any sort of violence.
Well, he's in the wrong bloody place for that, isn't he?
Well, no, he's absolutely in the right place for that. Absolutely. Because it meant that the crimes that he and his gang were involved in generally went uninvestigated. Because if no one's been stabbed or beaten the crap out of them or anything like that, someone's just been pickpocketed for their wallet's gone, their watch is gone. Are you hurt? No, I'm fine.
No, and the cops are on the payroll.
Cops, the cops have, they've got far bigger things to worry about, with people being murdered all over the place, to worry about some chap whose watch has gone, has been nicked. So everything tends to go under the radar, really. So he's played it quite shrewdly in that, don't bring attention to yourselves. No one's going to ask questions.
Okay.
He does, though, then start getting a bit cocky, and he is caught stealing a cash box out of an express coach.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah,
that's
so
silly.
He's
that's
actually
silly.
Caught red-handed, and he is sentenced to 3 years hard labour in Sing Sing prison.
Oh, Sing Sing, oh Jesus.
So not a jolly place, not a fun place. Prisoners aren't allowed to speak to each other. 10 hours hard labour every day, quarrying marble out of local mines and quarries. I think so. Not fun. Adam, he's given the job of warming frozen nitroglycerin.
What the oven? Why?
The nitroglycerin to explode the marble and to make the quarrying, and it comes frozen to make it stable
for
transport.
For reasons.
But when to use it, it needs to be warmed up prior to use, so it's more malleable and stuff.
He
has to warm this stuff. He later said, "I never questioned the guard, and I always wondered why he left when I put the brittle chunks in the stove. When one of the older inmates told me I could be blown to bits, I decided I'd have enough of prison." I can't blame you, mate.
He was fine up until that point,
until he realized that's why all the guards were poking their head around the door.
He was just like putting in, oh, lovely lumps of coal. And they were like, here's the stuff. Run, run. I had in my head something like a Roald Dahl book where, like, his job was warming the nitroglycerin. And before you said, put it in the fire source, it's like he had to sit on it for a bit.
He had to sit on it.
He had to cuddle it. And there it is, nicely melted, boys. Now use it to blow shit up.
No, he's putting it in the oven.
Oh, if you didn't know, you'd be like, this is fine. Oh, yeah. You're brilliant at this. You're not afraid at all.
Oh, look, I've exploded horribly.
He wasn't surprised by the bits of limb that were embedded in the walls around him.
It's not a good job to have, I suppose, given to all the new inmates and things like that, because, well, fuck it.
Christ almighty.
If they explode, then they explode. Now, one day he is working in the quarry and he manages to slip away. There is a changeover of the guards and unnoticed he manages to stow away on a tugboat. And
how?
Well, because Sing Sing's on an island.
Yes.
So there's a boat.
I know there's a boat, but just
he
also Sing Sing.
How does he
get on the boat and no one else thought of that?
Don't know. He manages it. He's a cunning man.
He's got a lot of nitroglycerin.
He's got a lot of nitroglycerin. And he does so completely unnoticed.
He just jumps on the boat and everyone, shit, when we think of that?
Until they, the prisoners are rounded up again after that day's work and they count them in and
head count.
Ooh, well, I'm missing. Oh, shit. He is gone. Now, back in New York, there is obviously a fugitive alert issued for the capture of this man. He decides he grows a moustache and a delightful pair of mutton chops to disguise himself. And if you Google him, that is the picture you will now see.
Beautiful.
Of Adam Worth. And he's got these big old moustache and mutton chops. It's quite impressive.
Does he stay indoors until they're grown? Going, come on.
He sits there concentrating really hard.
Just rubbing rosemary oil into him going, I've heard this is good.
But no. So while he's waiting for these to grow in, he actually leaves New York and he goes to Cambridge. Returns to his hometown.
Nice.
Of Cambridge. Not quite to see mother.
Oh, okay.
There he dresses as a policeman. He tricks the night watchman of a local insurance company into letting him into the building. And now he tells this night watchman that he has been sent to help him guard the building. There has been an alert of some people trying to rob the place.
Oh.
So he has been sent to assist with the lookout. The guard goes, oh, yeah absolutely. Lets him in. Now, once inside, he uses his knowledge of explosives, helpfully gained at Sing Sing, to break into the safe.
Right.
And steal the equivalent of $30,000.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Out of this safe.
Was the guard hurt at any point, or was he standing there going, no, this guy seems to know what he's doing?
He's still patrolling outside.
Or maybe he got $100. Maybe. Look the other way,
look
mate.
The other way. But, yep, no, he is scarpered with this with this pile of cash.
Love
he then
it.
Returns to New York, presumably moustache mutton chops now fully intact.
Fully bushy. Bushy.
But his new disguise does start to draw attention, but not because he looks like a disguised fugitive, but because now he has a startling resemblance to a chap called Henry Jarvis Raymond. This chap founded the New York Times.
Nice.
And was a prominent Republican politician in New York City.
Right.
And apparently with his moustache and with his new mutton chops, there was a striking resemblance between these two. He gets stopped in the streets going, oh, you're this man.
And no, goes, leave me alone.
But eventually he goes, no, I'm not him, but I'm related to him. And he reinvents himself as Henry Judson Raymond, a distant relative of the famous man himself.
That name is... relatives aren't named similarly to each other in that way. Henry Judson Raymond.
Apparently they are at the time, because there are only four names to choose from.
What was his first... What was the original
Henry
guy's name?
Jarvis Raymond.
Henry Jarvis Raymond, and he thought that...
And now he's now Henry Judson Raymond.
As his cousin, is he saying?
I don't know exactly what...
Say it's his brother. My mother had no imagination. First name, stay the same. Other one, sounds a bit similar. Yeah, that's it.
Well, he was considerably younger than... The politician.
Makes no difference.
So whether he's done sort of like, oh, in honour of your famous cousin, uncle, whatever.
Uncle-y thing.
We will name you.
We'll name you very similar.
But it worked. It absolutely worked.
I don't deny that it worked.
And he
because
used,
it's so ludicrous, you would believe it.
And he uses his funds that he's got from the Cambridge job. And he now uses this name and his resemblance to get into every party, into every society
do
event. And he's got the money to back it up. He's got the name to back it up as well. How thankful he never actually meets this politician just in a party or something that. You remember Aunt Joan, don't you? Yeah, absolutely.
Well, they look so similar.
It could well be a distant relation.
If he spots someone, he's just going to go in.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but he is there hobnobbing with the elite of New York, having a grand old time.
Love it. Hobnobbing, knob hobbing as well.
Yeah. It's at one of these soirees that he makes the acquaintance of Frederica Mendelbaum.
Okay, she sounds awesome.
Who is known as Mom. That's
Mom. Oh, right.
Frederica Mendelbaum.
Oh, that's people she's going, as, I can't handle that. Okay.
She's known as Mom. Mom is a, she is a society hostess.
Okay.
She is absolutely fantastic. She is also a criminal mastermind and boss and one of the biggest fences in New York City.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Oh my God. I love her already.
She is a fantastic character. She is the matriarch of much of the New York criminal underworld.
Nice.
She sets up her own school, Mom's Grand Street School, recruiting and teaching young criminals.
What? Did she have advertising?
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
With leafleting.
Mom's Grand Street School. How to pickpocket, how to rouse, how to hustle, how to con your way through things.
Just Grand Street School was fine. Like, no, that not like that one down the street that's shit.
This is a grand one.
Oh, my God.
She is fantastic. She may result in an episode on her.
Absolutely
brilliant. All the while she is maintaining this sort of criminal empire, she's also entertaining grand ladies and families of New York City in her gorgeous apartments and things.
Lovely.
So she's living this complete double life and doing it expertly.
Nice.
Now Mom becomes something of a patron for Adam. She takes him under her wing and really reveals the secrets of the trade to him. Through her, he expands into bank robberies, into store robberies. In 1869, Mom plans a job to rob the vault of the Boylston National Bank in Boston. This is what she wants to do. She gives the job to Adam Worth and suggests that he seeks out expert safecracker Charles Bullard.
Ah.
He is the man to go to for this sort of job. You might have a chat with him. Unfortunately, at the time, Charles Bullard is in jail.
Oh, shit.
Which is a slight inconvenience. Charles had been born into a very wealthy family in New York, but he has frittered away his inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
To continue to live in the manner he has become accustomed, he turns to a life of crime.
Ah.
On one occasion, he has bribed the guard on a Hudson River Express train. He manages to get away with the equivalent of about $100,000.
Jesus.
Off the train. During the robbery, he pretends to knock out the guard and then make away with all this cash.
Okay.
However, the guard's injuries are so light that they arouse suspicion and going, really, that knocked you down? There's not a mark on you. What are you going on about?
Ow.
It really, really, really hurts. When the guard is questioned about it, he quickly crumbles and he names Charles Bullard as the man who robbed the train.
Okay.
He gets sent to jail for his crime. But Mom is convinced that Charles is the only man for the job.
Uh-huh.
So she tasks Adam and another chap, Max Shinburn, to break Charles out of jail.
Ah.
It's the only way. We can't wait for him to get out of jail. We've got to get him out.
I like it. Be bold.
Be bold. Go absolutely. For it. Go for Be it. Bold. Indeed. Now, Adam and Max tunnel under the prison wall. They bribe the guards to ignore the noise.
The constant hammering.
Chiseling,
and them yelling at each other. Yeah. Do you hear anything? No.
The breakout is a success.
Oh my God.
But as you alluded to there, Adam and Max have a massive falling out. They do not get on well. They are not paired well. Mm. They actually become bitter rivals, really. But Adam and Charles, the chap who they're breaking out, they form a fast friendship. And a criminal partnership as well. And they are friends for many, 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 many years.
Such loyalty.
Together, they plan the robbery of Boylston Bank in Boston.
Nice.
Now, this is the biggest bank in the city.
Yay!
There's going to be thousands of dollars there, and they're gonna have a grand old time. They bought a barbershop next to the bank and they convert it into a wine bitters dealership.
What? I can't speak. What? Why wasn't that the ingredients?
It could have been the ingredients.
Wine bitters.
Yep, just a cocktail emporium.
It's a cocktail emporium. Why? They've opened ingredients. They've opened an ingredient shop, not just a cocktail shop.
Yeah.
It's an ingredient shop. It's like that bitter shop we went to and saw the highest man in the world in New York. Oh yep. My God.
So they open this shop. Under the cover of night, while the shop is open.
What have they been doing during the day as well? Do they even know what they're
selling,
doing?
They're selling bitters at
they
night.
They just went, it's bitters and wine. Fuck it. There go we ahead.
Go. Right,
there we go.
But then they start smashing through the wall between the shop and the bank.
Love.
One evening, they make it through. Again, Adam brings out his knowledge of explosives and he blows the doors off to the strong room in the bank. It does also make me wonder why they then needed an expert safecracker if they're just going to blow the thing to pieces.
Just in case.
In the first place.
What
or
if
perhaps,
they,
perhaps
up
they
the...
tried to yeah. crack it first and it didn't work. They've blown the thing to pieces. They make off with just shy of $500,000.
Wow.
That's to today's money equivalent.
Ooh, it's still nice.
It's still a considerable sum of cash. Now, the bank, of course, announced huge rewards for the capture of the thieves.
Yes.
And they hire the Pinkertons to track the men down.
Love it.
Now, Pinkerton agents are able to identify shipments of money out of Boston. where they've loaded up trains and trucks with their booty. Pinkerton agents are on the trail. Now, Adam and Charles know it's only a matter of time before the Pinkertons are behind them. They're on their back.
Mm.
As the authorities get closer, Adam and Charles know they need to make their escape. They need to get out of the city. So taking as much loot as they can, which is a lot, they set off for a new life in Europe.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, it's time for a break.
I think that's time for a drink. We're going to Europe.
We're going to Europe.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We're off to Europe, Nick.
We're off to Europe. Well, the men have now arrived in Liverpool.
We're in Liverpool. Yes. I forgot that they're in America.
They're not anymore. Adam is using his alias of Henry Justin Raymond. Charles becomes Charles H. Wells, a Texas oil man.
Nice.
Once they're in Liverpool, they meet a barmaid, Kitty Flynn.
Nice name.
Both men fall helplessly in love with Kitty.
Oh, is she lovely?
She's a delight. She wants to be a singer.
Oh, of course she does.
And she's there, both men, head over heels, in love with Kitty. Now, this could, of course, animosity between the two friends, the love rivals. But they sort of fall into a polyamorous relationship.
Oh, nice.
The three of them.
Nice.
Together. Kitty does go on to marry Charles.
Huh.
And eventually she has two children.
Mm-hmm.
No one's entirely sure who the father is. And it's thought that probably the marriage was more for appearance's sake and conventionality than any particular, I love you more than him or whatever.
It's just,
this is what the done thing is.
Well,
so
if she's going to get pregnant, then exactly. Yes. Let's have a marriage and they have this lovely,
no one probably,
yeah,
not even Kitty really knows who the father is of which child.
Fair play.
It works for them. In 1871, the trio moved to Paris.
Mm. Paris.
They have a lovely old time. They buy a 3-story building near the Paris Opera House and open the American Bar.
Okay.
It's a restaurant and bar on the ground floor and a gambling den above. Now, gambling is illegal in Paris at the time. So the tables are built so they can quickly be folded away into the walls at a moment's notice. They have a buzzer downstairs. As soon as the police are sighted, a buzzer goes, customs upstairs, these gambling tables flip back into the wall, behind curtains.
That's phenomenal.
Absolutely brilliant.
That is incredible.
So,
I mean, wow.
Yeah.
I Yeah, I am picturing that there is a very large kind of that old spring kind of mechanism with the tables and people are killed when they go back onto the wall.
People get flown across the room.
Glasses smashing, liquor everywhere, but there's no sign of gambling. There's a lot of blood and loose teeth.
And limbs hanging off the wall.
Someone's embedded in the wall, half crushed by the table going, well, but there's no gambling,
there's
so
no
carry
gambling
on.
There's no gambling going on here, so it's all good. So they're having a grand old time there. William Pinkerton. Now, he has taken over the agency from his father.
Yes.
By this point. He visits the bar in 1873. And Adam realises that he's been recognised. This man has spotted and he knows who I am. He and Charles sell the bar and decide to return to England.
Okay.
Not before stealing a bag of diamonds from a diamond merchant in the bar the night before they leave.
Sure. Yep, absolutely. Because diamond merchants love to carry bags.
They
of
carry their
bags.
He's having a few too many drinks. He's got his diamonds out on the bar. Going, oh, look at the lovely diamonds.
Shiny.
Look at the shiny things.
Can I pay for this in diamonds? Harden as luck for some. Yeah, okay, yeah. Good.
They manage to steal all his diamonds. They're now back in Blighty. And Adam uses his funds to set up his own criminal network, similar to Marm's over in New York, really. Now, this works across London. He buys Western Lodge, which is a grand Georgian mansion just on the edge of Clapham Common.
Mm.
Lovely big old place, still there today.
Lovely.
From there, he runs his new criminal empire. He also takes an apartment in Mayfair and works his way into high society, having a jolly old time with the best of them. He funds robberies, he buys intelligence, he bribes guards, and he ensures that all the actual crimes are carried out by men who only ever work with his intermediaries, his lieutenants.
Nice.
No one ever actually knows who he is.
Yeah, that's. I like that. I like yeah. that. The pyramid. The pyramid
Absolutely.
Of crime.
Pyramid of crime, indeed.
No one gets to speak to
No one speaks to
No
boss.
One speaks to
Yeah,
boss.
And his lieutenants are people he knows. People from New York. Mm. People from Paris who he trusts and he's worked with before who have decided to join him in London. Now, this includes Max Chinburn, the chap he dug Charles out of jail with. He rocks up. Adam's not a good thing. Right, I'm there. But again, the one rule is that his men are to avoid violence. If there is no violence, then things were generally forgotten a lot faster.
Yeah. It's a clever scheme. Yeah, I like
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Now, those, say, lower down the ladder have no idea who they are ultimately working for. Adam takes a 25% cut of whatever they make, whatever his men pull in. Now, this is a low enough percentage that those at the bottom don't feel too hard done by. They don't feel too aggrieved by being squashed.
I don't know. I think you would be. Stealing £100... But you got 25 quid going to your boss. That's a lot of money back then. But I guess they feel like for protection.
You're getting clues about who to go with. You know the police are being bribed to look away or something like that.
You're part of a gang.
So you're part of a gang, absolutely. So you've got that. And people think, okay, well, that's 25%. I'm still making off with 75 quid.
And also, if he's got a big gang going, that they're going to corner the market, as it were.
Absolutely.
So trying to be a pickpocket on their territory, not going to work.
Yeah, so people don't feel too hard done by. And he becomes incredibly wealthy from all of this. Now, the police soon come to realise that there is someone organising all this. There is someone behind this all these criminal exploits in London, but they have no clue as to who it actually is. But there's someone there. Adam Worth is sitting now at the head of an empire worth millions, really. He has agents and spies in every quarters. He could quite easily have sat back and let the money roll in.
Yeah.
But he likes to keep his hand in. He likes to keep his skills sharp.
Rest on your laurels.
You can't rest on your laurels.
That's when people get cocky.
Absolutely. On a trip to South Africa.
He takes a trip
to South Africa. He befriends the postmaster in Cape Town. Now, this is a long con. It takes several months.
Okay.
He befriends this man. He ingratiates himself into this man's life until the chap lets slip the dates of certain upcoming diamond shipments coming out of South Africa. A lot of diamonds in South Africa.
Well, let's not dwell on that too much.
He makes copies of the man's keys, and he makes off with $500,000 worth of diamonds before anyone notices anything is missing.
Christ.
And he returns to London.
Half a million.
$500,000 worth of diamonds.
It's not a lot in diamonds, I suppose, actually. They're like, that's just like a few pebbles. But
it's a lot of wee little diamonds, not one big chunky diamond. A lot of wee
You'd
little
probably
diamonds.
You noticed that. Famously, the big chunky diamonds are given names.
Given names. So he returns to London with all these diamonds, with bags full of diamonds. People are thinking, well, how are you going to get rid of these diamonds? How are you going to flog them off? How are you going to fence them? He sets up a company, Wynert and Company. Diamond merchants.
Of course.
Well known for selling diamonds rock bottom prices. Absolute rock bottom prices. You want some cheap diamonds? Wynert and Company is here. Disappears as quickly as it was, as it is founded. He's got rid of his diamonds. Company vanishes.
It's like the company that set up in Wolf of Wall Street. Where they set up the really prestigious name and say it's been established for years while they're absolutely screwing people over. Exactly that.
His most famous theft, though, one that people always know about, was of Thomas Gainsborough's painting of the Duchess.
There she is.
Yep, this was painted in 1876. Yeah. The painting sold for $50,000. At the time, which was the highest value ever paid for a work of art. At the time. This is the most expensive piece of art ever in the history of the world. Lord. Huge amount of money.
Oh, Gainsborough.
Adam took a liking to it. He thought, well, I quite like that.
It's quite pretty.
It's quite pretty. I like that picture.
Fluffy.
One night, Adam and two of his associates, a chap called Junker Phillips and Little Joe.
Big Joe wasn't available.
They break into the art gallery where it is on display.
Right.
And they cut it out of the frame. They just cut the thing out of the frame and roll it up. Now, as I say, he has fallen in love with this painting. And he decides against selling it on. Now, this does cause some disagreement between his two associates who have been brought in to assist. They were expecting a payout. From this, they were expecting the painting to be sold. They would get their wad of cash, and all is well.
Oh, he just wants to keep it.
Yeah, if he just wants to keep it, it's not being sold. Then what do they get? And so this causes some consternation between them, and a bit of friction. Eventually, he agrees to pay them off. He says, "Fine." Out of his own pocket, he gives them each a wad of cash. Little Joe returns to the U.S., and while he's there, he tries to rob the Union Trust Company.
Right, okay.
This does, obviously emulating what he's seen in London. This does not go well for Little Jail. He fails miserably and is arrested. Under questioning from the Pinktons, again, who've elbowed their way in, Little Joe reveals that it is Adam Worth who has stolen the Gainsborough in London.
Sells him out.
He completely sells him out. He's now going by the name of Henry Raymond over in London. He's the one who's stolen the Gainsborough. The Pinktons inform Scotland Yard of this. There's just not enough proof. Scotland Yard are fantastic. This is great. We can't prove any of it.
Oh,
we've got the word of a convicted criminal that this other convicted criminal is the mastermind behind it.
It would be so good if all of this was true. Do you have any evidence? No, but I have feelings. I have deep feelings.
Yeah, I have feelings and thoughts. They can't prove anything.
Yeah.
But now he's on their radar. He's now on their radar. By now, Kitty has had her two daughters. Remember Kitty?
Yes, she was pregnant.
She's had the two daughters. And the marriage is starting to show its strain. This sort of three-way thing is starting to show. And it eventually comes to an end when Charles's first wife, who he had apparently forgotten to mention to anyone, turns up in London and threatens to go to the police and charge him with bigamy.
Is she holding a rolling pin?
very possibly. Now, Charles does not cope well with this revelation, and he takes to the drink hard. Kitty decides enough is enough, and she leaves London. She emigrates to New York with her two daughters to get away from the lot of them.
Fair play.
Charles starts drinking even more. He moves to Europe, and he starts travelling around the continent, pickpocketing the odd criminal job where he can.
Yeah.
But he's not in a good place.
Oh, this lovely, convenient relationship that I had. Oh, it's all gone to shit.
It's all gone to shit.
It was all based around me, and suddenly she's not happy anymore. Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not gone well. With Kitty and Charles gone, Adam marries himself. That's a very strange way of putting that. Marries himself?
I think it's great energy. Yeah. If he did it.
He's having a grand old time.
I'm going to marry myself. That'll show the bitch.
Try that one again. He marries Marguerite Bolgen.
Ooh, Bolgen.
Bolgen. Now, she is apparently entirely clueless about her new husband's real identity or his criminal empire. Mm-hmm. But she is lives in blissful ignorance. They have two children, Henry and Beatrice. Uh-huh. In 1892, Adam receives word that Charles, who has been travelling the continent, and Max Shinburn, they've both been arrested in Belgium.
Oh.
Which is not ideal. Apparently they had teamed up. Charles is also gravely ill.
Oh.
The alcohol is catching up with him.
Yeah, catching up with him.
By the time Adam arrives in Belgium, Charles is dead.
Oh dear.
He has passed away. Ugh. After learning that his friend is dead, Adam starts taking unnecessary risks. He does start...
Sort of feeling the empire is like crumbling around him. It's just feeling... me against the world.
Exactly. Mm. Now, in Belgium, so he's supposed to be just be visiting to see his old friend, he decides to improvise a robbery. He's going to rob a money train.
Okay.
Okay, why not? Hires two completely untested associates. An American chap, Johnny Kirchen, and a Dutchman, Alonzo Hen.
Right.
The robbery goes bad fast. Police capture Adam in the act. The other two men do not stick around to help their boss. They fuck off.
Oof.
They leg it and escape.
Foolish man.
Foolish man.
Not planning.
Adam Worth is carted off to jail. In jail, Adam refuses to identify himself. The Belgian police sent pictures to Scotland Yard and to the New York Police Department, both of whom identify this man as Adam Worth or any one of his number of his aliases that they've got. Either way, it's the same man. This is the man we are after. He is wanted for multiple crimes. And of course, the Pinkertons also get involved. They're still on the hunt for the perpetrator of the art theft. And they knew that Adam Worth is involved in that as well.
They come up with just a series of kind of like moustaches going, could you put this on for a minute and put some mutton chops on for a second?
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
So he is wanted by many, many, many people.
Many.
Is sent to trial in Belgium on the 20th of March, 1893. Now, this is primarily for the robbery of the money train in Liège. But the prosecutor throws everything they know about Adam Worth at him. His entire history in New York, in London, in Paris.
Can they do that?
Well,
they do.
They do, absolutely. They don't try to charge him with that, but they use it as sort of his character.
Take it into consideration.
He flatly denies everything.
Do it.
He has nothing to do with any of these terrible things in London, New York, and Paris. None of it. Yes, he was guilty of the attempted robbery in Liège.
Mm-hmm.
He did that. But that was a stupid act of a desperate man.
Totally.
Penniless man, desperate to get back to his family in London. That's the reason he did that. Everything else is hearsay and rumour concocted by British and American authorities. It's all bollocks. In the end, Adam Worth is sentenced to 7 years for the robbery. And he is sent to Leuven prison.
Ooh.
His time in prison is not fun.
No, 7 years is not bad.
Prison, not fun, but also Max Shinburn, who apparently has resented Adam Worth his life. There's been this big rivalry. He hires inmates in the prison to make his life a misery.
Oh.
He is beaten on a daily basis by Max's contacts. The news from the outside world is even more miserable, really. His carefully built criminal empire in London is being torn to shreds by his lieutenants who are vying for authority and supremacy. Without him at the top, everyone's trying to take control. It's all being just torn to pieces. His fortune that he had in London is being stolen by anyone and everyone. He is being left penniless. Everything he had worked so hard is being ripped to pieces.
Ugh.
And utterly destroyed.
It's going to be quite a blow as well in that horrible conditions, and then in prison to hear just everything has gone to shit.
Everything has gone to shit.
You mean nothing anymore, your legacy.
The man who was tasked with looking after his wife, so his wife and his two children, seduces his wife, sleep with his
How
wife.
How did he not know that would happen?
Then abandons his wife.
Right.
His wife ends up in an asylum.
Oh, God.
The children are taken away. And they are sent over to New York to live with Adam's brother.
Oh, God.
He is released early for good behaviour. He is released in 1897. He returns to London to find the tatters of a once great criminal enterprise. He visits his wife in the asylum. She barely recognizes him. Cannot remember his name in the asylum. He decides to move back to America, not before stealing £4,000 from a diamond shop.
To fund his travels. I'm such a broken man. Yeah. I've been so sad. Just gonna rob this place. I just need a few diamonds to sit tide me over.
Once he's back in the States, he does have one final trump card. He has one thing up his sleeves.
Okay.
The Gainsborough painting.
The painting
of the Duchess, which he had wisely smuggled out of London several years earlier back to the States. He still had that. He met with William Pinkerton. And the pair came to an agreement.
No.
They made a deal. We don't exactly know what went down, but we do know that the painting was returned. He had it for 25 years.
Oh, my God. Well, he truly loved it.
And he loved it. He had it for 25 years, but the painting was returned. No charges were ever filed against Adam for the theft. Adam left the US with his children and a bank account, $25,000 healthier.
What did he say? What did he know?
Well, I think he just said, I'll give you the painting back.
But I'll stop.
But you want to pay me for it. Because this painting by then was worth a hell of a lot more.
But then just arrest him, surely.
Whatever reason.
Wow.
Well, yeah, if he did have something.
Okay, so he's left.
So he leaves the US with his children. He settles back in London. They take an apartment overlooking Regent's Park. It's all very lovely. And there he lives a quiet life until his sudden death in 1902. He is buried in Highgate Cemetery.
Wow.
His tombstone reads Adam Worth, a.k.a. Henry J. Raymond, the Napoleon of crime.
Oh, my God.
And that is his story, Professor Moriarty, the original.
Napoleon of crime.
Napoleon of crime.
What a brilliant story. Got no idea it was based on a real person.
What
a criminal mastermind. And praise to you, Nick, for the end of that story, for having to battle with my kitten who wanted to climb you. Medea just wanted to just get involved.
And mainly it's just like, I want to jump on the keyboard. And then don't jump on the keyboard.
Yeah, she's so cute and she's purring and wants to climb on your shoulders and everything. That's fine. But jumping on the keyboard, that will just delete the whole podcast. So we can't have that. Amazing story. Oh, man. The Napoleon of crime. Transatlantic as well. Oh, God.
Global. So he was in South Africa. He was in Paris.
It's everywhere.
New York and London and Boston. Liverpool. It's
truly, yeah, that glamour of the criminal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I can understand where Moriarty came from in that he was the man who ran the empire. And if you want to create someone who was very cunning, very slick, the gentlemanly kind of idea
Doesn't get his hands dirty.
Doesn't drink and does not want violence because violence breeds violence and attracts attention. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
What an incredible person.
It's so cunning. So very clever.
I had no idea about him. Yeah. Oh, I love it. I do at the end there. I love the menage a trois and like the husband who got really depressed because that didn't work out for him.
But it's amazing. There's one or two books on him, and I'm so surprised there's not more. There's not like films or TV or anything like that about him because he's a fascinating character.
Well, I guess people take bits of it and then turn it into something else.
I think I think he's been taken over by Moriarty. So
yeah,
by that yeah.
Well, I mean, like, what are you going to do? You're just going to do Moriarty.
And then it's changeable.
You write about him, then someone just leans too much into the Moriarty kind of lore around it, and it becomes not a very interesting book. The early years as well, and being in New York and the gangs and everything like that. I'm sure he's like woven into lots of gang sort of stories as well. Oh, I love it. Great story, Nick. Well done. Well, what do you think, people? What do you think of the story of Adam Worth? What do you think of all the legends around him? Do you think that Moriarty lives up to his hype, or does he live up to Moriarty's hype? Do you know more stories? Do you know more legends associated with him? Do you know more tales? Or what would you have had him do? And what character would you have invented around him?
I mean, do you know Frederica Mendelbaum?
Oh, my God. She sounds great.
Fantastic.
Frederica Mendelbaum, mom. Well, I was thinking, because she was in Liverpool. Wasn't she?
No, she was in New York.
No, she was in New York.
She was the criminal boss in New York.
Thank you. Because that sparked a memory, and it's not just me plugging here, that there's a book that I've been sent an arc of, and on my TikTok and on my Instagram as well, I do book reviews as well, and there's a book called The Knowing, by a woman called Emma Hines, and it comes out in January actually this year, but there's some pre-release copies out there. And this is all about a mystic, a tattooed mystic who operates in New York around the criminal gangs, and there's this kind of gang of sort of, you know, so-called at the time circus freaks, and then you've got kind of the Dead Rabbits and P.T. Barnum and all of this sort of thing, but there's a character who is just like her. So, interesting. Jump on the comments of this episode, tell us your thoughts, your theories, your feelings about this story, but most importantly, while you do it, mix up the Duchess too.
The Duchess, I mean, it's gone right to my head.
The Duchess of Devonshire. It really did, didn't it?
You may have noticed, as I was telling that story, I got more and more and more drunk.
No, people will not notice, Nate, because I've edited that out. When we get drunk on an episode, Patreons hear about it.
Yeah.
Everyone else goes, they're so professional, they never stutter.
Straight to my head, that one.
That's weird, because normally I get white wine drunk.
My turn.
It's your turn. Well, let's finish the wine. I thought it was interesting. It was good.
Yeah.
Mix it up for this episode because it's easy.
Nothing too complex in there. Nothing too weird and wonderful.
You'll have the ingredients.
Yes, exactly.
And also, if anyone noticed, Medea was a guest on this episode at the end. There was some heavy purring, which I probably couldn't edit out. Let's just try and... She's literally gripping the microphone now.
Eat the microphone.
Tried to call up Nick's leg while we were recording. Please join us on Patreon if you haven't already. It's a wonderful place with extra episodes every single week, as well as lots of bonus content, including videos of our cocktail making. This week, some baking.
And some baking, yes, indeed.
Yes, and also video highlights of each episode that we do. Also, please consider leaving us a review on Apple iTunes. A good review. We'd like that. If you have notes... Send us a DM on Instagram.
Just email us.
And we'll chat. It'll be fine. We also have merch if you want to adorn yourself in beautiful things from the Poisoner's Cabinet. We have links in all of our social media profiles, whether you are in the US or the UK, to get your own merch designed by the Poisoner's Cabinet. It's right there. And it's coming up to Christmas.
It's perfect gifts as well.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisoner's Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are... trying to kill you.
Boy.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.